Hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison. Welcome to Scots Language Radio and a programme that celebrates our thing to deal with the Scots language. We're going as far as our lugs will take us. In this edition, twa major launches on twa different seas that micht hae the power to redirect the waves. We report on the launch of the new Scots Language Ambassador Scheme for Education Scotland and the launch of the new Scottish Rural Parliament. And as we rollick around Christmas and Art's bits, we're going back to the start of it in the New Testament, and we're speaking to the man that's translated it into Doric. As is ever the case, we've a lot to speak about, so we'll nae hang about. We start with the launch of Education Scotland's new Scots Language Ambassador Scheme. You heard about it first from Simon Hall from Orkney in episode 10. A new nationwide scheme to promote the use of the Scots language in schools has just been launched in Edinburgh at the Scottish Storytelling Centre. The scheme that has sprung from the appointment of four Scots language coordinators 6 months ago sees Scots speakers from a' the airts and pairts appointed to become champions of the Scots language. Scotland's Assistant Director of Education, Jane Renton, officially launched the scheme and introduced the 30 or so special ambassadors, the teachers, the musicians, broadcasters, singers, writers, poets, actors and politicians, abody, for will be paired with schools all throughout Scotland and work with them for 3 years to help promote and celebrate the language. Well, after the launch, I spoke to Jane Renton about the importance of the ambassador scheme.
Well, I think it's great. 6 months on from the team of Scottish language coordinators taking up their posts, that we've got this far, that we've now got 30-odd people who have agreed to be Scots language ambassadors and who are going to be going out and engaging with schools and encouraging young people to work with Scots and to enjoy using their Scots and promoting Scots across the country. I think it's great.
Are you confident that this is not just going to be a tick-and-box exercise in schools?
Well, I hope it's not a ticking box. I mean, I hope that what teachers are going to be doing in schools and what young people and children will be doing in schools will be something meaningful, that they'll be using Scots in a way that's interesting and relevant to them. And it's not just about language work. It could be any bit of the curriculum, music or drama or studying Scots foods and using the Scots terms for them. Or it could be geography, the place names. It could be the history. There's so many opportunities for with just a wee bit of creativity, and we are going to help give support for that.
How confident would you be about speaking to me in Scots right now?
I can speak to you in Scots any time.
How do you speak it in formal situations?
Well, I found it difficult. It's interesting because I asked, when we were interviewing the Scots language coordinators a year ago, I asked them all, one of the reasons I got involved was because I was able to ask them all a question in their interview in Scots. And although all four of the ones who were enthusiastic, who were successful, plus the other ones, they all are great Scots speakers, but they all found it difficult to sustain Scots as part of a formal, professional discussion.
Now, you would say you're a fluent Scots speaker.
Yeah.
Brought up in Aberdeenshire.
Aye. And for with my mother, and we're just having a laugh in the house, and we're discussing if we're buying for a dinner, and if I did fit yesterday and all that. That's when I can speak Scots, nae bother. But ask me to speak about my job, and I'm lapsing back into English, and then I can see why that is. It's because I'm nae used to speaking Scots in that context, and maybe that's something we need to do something about.
Address the fact that folk find it difficult speaking it in formal situations.
Aye, and sometimes you maybe didn't hear the professional language and, you know, vocabulary and nomenclature and stuff when I made that up in Doric, because it's never been about that. It's been about informal social situations and traditional language, and it's nae about professional situations, which is maybe the biggest challenge we've got.
Right. Now, the other thing is, question I'm often asked about, mm-hmm. it as well, is it a dialect? Is Scots a dialect, or mm-hmm. is it a language?
Well, I was speaking about that earlier on. You see, I didn't think there's a difference linguistically between language and dialect. I think if you get into linguistics, there's nae a definition of a language and a dialect. I like the definition that I remember from my university time, which was a language is a dialect with an army. So it's if a country has got political status and it's a nation, they can call the way they speak a language. But if you didn't have that political status, if you're not a nation, if you didn't have an army, the way you speak's a dialect.
So Doric is part of that language?
I think Doric's a language, yeah. I mean, I would, when I look back to when I was at Quine, I was brought up bilingually. Absolutely.
Speaking English in Scots.
English at school.
Right.
Writing in English at school, getting good at that, but speaking Doric at home. And as I say, even when I started university, I was still, that was still my, the way I spoke, until I quickly neutralised it when people thought I was thick, because I did it.
And it didn't hold you back anyway?
No, it didn't hold me back. No, absolutely.
Assistant Director of Education Scotland, Jane Renton. Well, writer and broadcaster Billy Kay is one of the appointed Scots Language Ambassadors. He was there at the launch, and I asked him about the significance of the scheme.
Well, it's been a long time coming. I was involved with the Ministerial Working Group, and our bottom line recommendation was that these Scots Language Coordinators had to be established in every airt and pairt of Scotland. As usual, we didn't quite get that, but we've got four of them that are new working, and they've established this great idea for a scheme of Scots Language Ambassadors to send folk that are confident about their Scots and encourage them to hain their mother tongue.
But there's been a lot of discussion after the launch day, and some was touching on the problems, like Scots is often seen as a comedic language. Scots is often seen as an oral language, even.
Aye.
You know, it's the language of the peasants and the serfs.
Aye, well, I've been hearing that all my days. Until folk come out and use it in the kind of places that it hasn't been used historically, then their ideas will continue. But if we just use it, them that does hear a good Scots tongue in their head have to come out and be seen to be using it in public. And that way, it'll become a normal thing. The language will be normalised. It's all there. Folks speak it, but they're conditioned to switch to English in formal or semi-formal situations. We have to get into the position that folk that do hear a good Scots tongue are confident enough to use it in any situation at all.
Writer and broadcaster Billy Kay. And photos of some of the ambassadors that was there at the launch can be seen on our Scots Language Radio Facebook page. There are wheel to be seen, some will scrub up bunny, others took a little bit more time. On that note, let me introduce my studio companion at this point. If I was there at the launch, folklorist Steve Byrne, and we can now reveal, Steve, we are both appointed among the lineup of Scots Language Ambassadors by the Education Scotland. Right, fix your tack on the scheme.
I think it's a fantastic endeavour. I'm looking forward to working with any of the skills in my local area, which I think this time will be East Lothian. I thought it was awful refreshing at the launch to actually find out that there are folk like Jane Renton in place. I thought that was...
She was really very, very impressive, because she just said it like fit it was.
Exactly, and echoed a lot of her own thoughts, mm-hmm. In terms of how we view language and the different situations you use it in. So I was awful inspired to see that folk like that are recognising the things that many of us in the Scots language kind of activist roles have been going on about for years, and she's had her own journey into finding out about that in social and informal situations, mm-hmm. and I just thought that it was great that somebody like that is in such a powerful position, you could say, in terms of having influence over the education system to bring the status of Scots up to where it belongs.
Where it belongs, and we'll be catching up with the ambassadors either way through next year, hearing how they're getting on, of course, and I think that'll be a fantastic scheme. It looks like a really powerful, fine bunch of folk.
Absolutely.
Enthusiastic. Aye. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. With me is Steve Byrne, folklorist, and this is a track for the album Highland Strands with Kevin MacLeod and the Fiddlin' Solicitors' Reels. Thank you. Solicitors Reels, and that's for Kevin MacLeod's album Highland Strands. Now, last episode, we heard for John Hutchison, the chair of FIT was to become the first Scottish Rural Parliament. And John referred to the forthcoming inaugural gathering in Oban. And I can tell you that Scotland's first Rural Parliament closed with a clear message to the Scottish Government that Scotland's rural communities want democratic renewal. They want a mere empowered, connected and sustainable rural Scotland. More than 400 delegates were there for the launch and the 3 days of confabs, and the Hale session finished with the majority in favour that the Rural Parliament should ging on. Next fall session to take place in 2016. Now that's who it ended, but it started with Piper Angus MacColl playing the Parliament tune, specially written by internationally renowned composer, director of the Celtic Connections Festival, Donald Shaw. Now the tune heralded in that Chairman John Hutchison referred to as a historic moment. He opened the event welcoming the 400 delegates for our Scotland with words in Gaelic and English and starting with Scots.
Good forenicht, friends. We've been making ready for a 12-month now, and I'm fair pleased that folk have now forgathered. At least we can get yokit and start taking out the furrow that'll lead us into the future. We'll maybe gang off the glide whiles, but there's nae doubt we have the poor and the notion to find the richt dreel. Aiblins folk'll mind the day and keep back in the years to come. Our country parliament is now started.
John Hutchison. Well, over the next 3 days, delegates focused on the issues that affected their ain corners of Scotland. They were addressed by twa cabinet ministers, Richard Lockhead and Mike Russell. And after much mulling and much shacking and nodding of heads, the delegates agreed there needed to be a much stronger voice for the rural Scotland. And just before the summing up session, I spoke to Sandy Brunton from Mall. Now, Sandy is one of the directors of the Scottish Rural Action, the company that has been set up to create the first rural parliament. So what did you think the gathering had achieved?
Well, this gathering is only part of the process. The process started about 18 months ago, a year ago, and there's been engagement meetings, there's been visits, there's been, we were at the Royal Highland Show, but there's been lots and lots of different internet things, there's been survey monkeys and all sorts of different things to be able to gather together people's opinions about the issues that are related to them specifically. So this is where all of that information has been gathered together, and it's been put into a 3-day event where there are visits, there is a bit of celebration, I have to say, and there's going to be the ability to learn from each other and also to challenge things and to ask the questions.
Okay. What would you take away from this?
Well, I've taken away a bit of a croaky throat, actually, from last night, because there was a lot of dancing and singing last night, which was good. I think I'm taking away actually a lot of work to do. There's a lot of things to carry on from this. There's a lot of engagement still to happen. There's still people that don't know much about it at all. So there's a lot of work still to do.
Sum it up, though, in a sentence. If you fit sentence, would you say that that was the sentence that will ring a rattle about in my head?
Well, I think that it, for me, it was that it's that summed up that it was not that the government can empower the communities, it's the communities that can empower the government.
Sandy Brunton. And as I said, the topics and issues at the Heasings are workshops and open sessions were varied, for internet connection and problems with land reform. At any of the breaks, I met up with farmer Robert Leach.
Aye, Robert Leach, and originally for Fife.
Okay. So far are you new, Robert?
Yeah, I'm living Mull. I've been in Mull for the last 40 odd year.
Are you? How many acres have you got in Mull?
Well, I've got about 1,000 acres.
Is that hill or arable?
It's all hill run.
Is that sheep?
Aye, mainly sheep and cattle.
How many sheep?
We've be 400 odd ewes and 50 kye.
Blackface?
Blacky ewes, aye.
Okay. Robert, why are you here?
Why am I here? Well, there's quite a few reasons. Because land tenure and such like, and they need to come to the fore. I mean, a lot of landowners are racking rents up. Transport. I mean, when you live on an island, it's a raw place to live. But all the extra costs you've got, and I mean, if you're building a house in Mull, you're going to be 25 and 30% dearer than the same house in the mainland, and it's all in transport.
So, the question I could ask you, just being devil's advocate, is why bother biding there then?
Well, it was a great place to bring the bairns up. And it was the only place I could afford a ferrum. It'd be great to be up in Aberdeenshire on a good grass ferrum. But I was just a shivering. This ferrum come up and we got it. And we've been there since. And my daughter, she's staying over that ferrum. And I was lucky I was able to buy a next door place. So I've got the wee bit and she's got the big bit.
So we're here at the launch of the Rural Parliament, Scottish Rural Parliament. What would you hope would come out of this?
Well, two or three things. That the rural voice be heard. Everything goes to the towns and cities. But we're out here trying to make a living the same as the rest of the folk. And especially if you're on an island, your costs are that much more. And it's not always recognised. So there's that aspect there. And there's need to be a change in land holding. I would never say to try and take an estate for a buddy that's working with the community and running an estate, but where you've got these tracts of ground, but there's nothing happening. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Look, we're saying, we're watching, there must be around about, must be over 400 folk here. There's a lot of goodwill and energy, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
It's hopeful,
aye.
Robert, aye. You're hoping.
We just stick with that, so you can do is hope. Well, things are changing.
Aye.
The referendum has fairly lifted folk to say, well, we're wanting a share of this. And even though we didn't get independence, we're heading that road, I think.
Steered up the energy anyway.
Oh, aye.
Robert, thank you for that and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Very good, madam.
Robert Leach, a Mull farmer for Fife and a proper gentleman. Other issues to come up were planning permission rules, the size of county councils and the monster juggernaut that was identified as centralisation. Now, Councillor David O'Neill is a councillor for North Ayrshire. He represented Irvine for the last 32 years. He's also president of the Convention of Scottish Local Authorities, COSLA. He was chair of the commission that produced the report card Strengthen Local Democracy, and he referred to the problems with centralisation as well. After he spoke to the delegates, I asked Councillor O'Neill how he would stop Fit Was New being called the centralisation juggernaut.
Well, what we have to do is, first of all, get our foot on the brake of that juggernaut. Almost everybody, in fact, I think everybody who's today involved in public life within Scotland has known only the centralisation. We need to convince people that that has not delivered, has not given us the outcomes that we're looking for. On a specific, what we need to do about that is to get the political parties to include within their manifestos that devolution, double devolution and subsidiarity down into the heart of our communities is the right way to go and stop the juggernaut of centralisation.
Does that mean smaller community, smaller councils?
Well, it means that councils and all the public agencies should do things in a different way. We have 32 councils in Scotland and we have 14 territorial health boards. All of those are rather large. Local authorities that exist today should be given the ability to do things in a much more localised basis and do, this is a buzz term I know, locality planning.
Can I ask you about your hero worship or your heroes? You mentioned that just right at the end of there, of the discussion there. And you took Abdi by surprise because somebody asked you about five of your heroes and you came out with an unexpected answer. Tell me about that again, Dave.
Yeah, well, I could have said when I was asked the question, who's your heroes? I could have said Nelson Mandela. I could have said Gandhi. I could have said Martin Luther King. But what I said was, it's the man or woman who runs the local kids' football team. It's the person who runs the local community association. It's the person that goes out and runs the old folks' welfare committee. These are the people that make a real difference within our communities, and they're all heroes.
Well said, Councillor David O'Neill. And I bring in my studio companion again at this point, Steve Byrne. David O'Neill is nae a manny to mince his words, Steve, and he's got it right there, isn't he?
These
are the local heroes.
Absolutely, and you don't have to look any further than what I'm involved with traditional music in Edinburgh and other parts of Scotland, just to ken the hunters of folk that are involved gain their time to get traditional music on the go, and that's the same for our walks of life. And these folk are worth millions of pounds to the mm-hmm. to the economy in Scotland, and they're underrated.
They're unsung heroes, as David referred to there. But we'll just say thank you to them all.
Absolutely.
And hope they're all listening, but and hope they have a fine Christmas as well. After this next song, I'll tell you Farr was the winner of the Scottish Innovation Award for Business, awarded at the Rural Parliament opening ceremony. This is a Northeast song, the Greg Duncan Collection. And it's fitting really to the Rural Parliament. The title of the song is The Present Time Is Ours, and it's sung by a singer called Freda Morrison.
Fah.
Aye. Let us all be hearty, boys, the moments we are here, and banter o'er our earthly joys. They're only 2 or 3 year. They're only 2 or 3 year, my boys, maybe only ooze. See how the cheer and spark about the present time is ours.
The present time is ours. The present time is ours. See how the cheer and spark about the present time is ours.
While we are your gaddy clays, that signifies a show. A multitude of cares and griefs, they only prove a foe. A ragged coat, we elbic suit, will bang the winter shoes. See how the cheer and spark about the present time is ours.
The present time is ours. The present time is ours. Say hard a cheer and spark a boot. The present time is ours.
Let ministers say just what they will, they'll tell you this and that. Say blithe are we and say are they, when quietly they meet. When quietly they do sit round, secure we lock at doors. See merrily they laugh and sing, the present time is ours.
The present time is ours. The present time is ours. Say hard a cheer and spark a boot, the present time is ours.
They'll bid you raise your hopes a bean and greet where'er ye dwell. They'll mock ye lads a yont the mean, but grip the glass themsel. But let us learn to be wise and boo the sweetest flowers. Leave thistle leaves to them that please. The present time is ours.
The present time is ours. The present time is ours. Say hard a cheer and spark a boot. The present time is ours. The present time is ours. The present time is ours. Say hard a cheer and spark a boot. The present time is ours.
The present time is ours, sung by another good singer, called Freda Morrison. And nay enhanced, I would say, for the noises coming through the sound recording room, otherwise kent as the Dukit. It was I thought that's nay on the album.
I thought there was a mistake in there, aye.
It was Richie singing along.
I thought, Fandy, we'll record that bit. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is the other Freda Morrison. With me is Steve Byrne, now referred to, after 11 episodes, as a resident rumbler, because he rumbles about in books.
It's like the name of a wrestler or something.
Resident rumbler. This is our 12th episode. Can you believe it?
No, quite, no.
Episode. You, me and Richie have been together in the studio for 12 episodes.
We've come out in between the episodes, aye, we should say.
We did kind of go out and mix with other folk. We started almost exactly a year ago. And fit a year we've hid. We're older, I would say, but we're maybe no wiser. And we can announce that we've had our funding renewed again for another year for Creative Scotland, supported by the Scots Language Centre. Thank you to all the folk that made that possible. And I think this would be a good time to hear a break for all that's gone on, to hear a blither about fit Easter going on. This is the season to be fit ever, so fit ever did we Easter day at this time of year. Steve, over to you.
When merry Yule day comes, I trow, you'll scantlins find a hungry moo. Sma are our cares, our stomachs foo a gusty gear, and kickshaws strangers to our view sin fairn year.
Jeez, that's just come from being together for 11 episodes.
Just been in here reading poetry the whole time. Robert Ferguson, of course, the 24th of December, with Christmas coming up, that's what they would call the start of the Daft Days, and I think that's self-explanatory, Daft Days folk carrying on and all that sort of thing. When are things going on? Used to gang on up in the Northern Isles, as I've said before in other programmes, seems to be one of the places that a lot of the traditions have been collected. But here's some sayings for you, for Orkney. A warm Christmas means a cold Easter. A green Christmas marks a white Easter. Or a green Christmas can mark a fat kirkyard.
I'm trying to follow the other way through. I lost it after a fat
kirkyard.
Kirkyard means a white Christmas, no? I lost it anyway.
And if Christmas is on a Thursday, it'll be a windy winter. So I didn't guess. What day is Christmas on this year?
No, fit, why would they think that?
I didn't again.
Oh, that's Thursday, I'll hear windy winter. That's it.
No. When a pig was killed and hung up at Christmas, they would stick knives and forks and stick into the hams to keep the fairies away. On the 13th day after the old Christmas, water was aye ticking in for the well afore it was dark, so that it didn't turn into poison or wine.
So they didn't have fire a bucket, probably, no. It was dark.
Like that.
That's why we got bad luck.
In Scalloway in Shetland, the bairns on Christmas Eve would spend the night just moving things about, including boats, so they would block up hoose doors with fish boxes and all this kind of thing. So in the morning, Abdi would be out looking to see if anything belonging to them had gone missing.
The pigs were sticking forks and knives in them or something.
Honestly. Now, here's a rough one. Have you heard of a thing called a lang bed?
No.
Well, a lang bed was in the winter communal sleeping, particularly after a winter wedding in Shetland.
Can we broadcast about this?
I'm not sure, but I'll just finish off with this wee sentence saying that a girl got into trouble, the kirk, she was teen afore the kirk session, and they kind of looked kindly upon it. Appeal for mercy was made to the minister on the understanding it had happened in a lang bed.
Would this be a good time to hear a bit of music?
Maybe so.
Okay. This is for the album Outlands. This is the Kansas City Hornpipe with a piper, Fred Morrison. Kansas City Hornpipe with piper Fred Morrison. And you were saying, Steve, that the banjo player was well known in the I suppose the bluegrass scene.
That's right. It's Ron Block for Alison Krauss and Union Station. Brilliant, brilliant band, aye.
Brilliant track, that. Isn't it? It really has got it there. Now, for the music, we were hearing about the happenings at the inaugural meeting of the Scottish Rural Parliament in Oban. At the opening ceremony, 8 semi-finalists dealt together in around 400 folk about their projects. The overall winner was to be announced later, and I was teaming with a company called Stramash, an outdoor nursery. The man that did the introduction was the director, Mike Storey, and he told me about the company and other things.
Well, Stramash was set up partly by Argyll and Bute Council about 5 years ago as a tiny little social enterprise to try to fund some kind of outdoor education for kids in Argyll and Bute. And it was staffed by some fantastic volunteers and one or two full-timers. The chief executive, Neil Urquhart, is living proof, I think, that if you have a passion for the outdoors and a passion for teaching kids, then you can achieve anything. And the organisation has moved massively in the 5 years. It struggled for a number of years to get funding like many others do. We didn't want to become grant junkies, so we were trying to get service level agreements with councils. But all that time, Stramash was building itself an incredible reputation for delivery and a fantastic reputation with the parents of the children that we were looking after. So when I came on the board with a business background, I looked very much at how could we take the things that we did best and actually make some money from it so it was sustainable, because there is no point with a charity of going under.
I'm watching you saying all this, and you're smiling as you're saying this.
Very much so.
Am I imagining, do you enjoy doing this?
I've absolutely loved it. I got involved because I had a wee boy at 3 who we decided to put him into Stramash Nursery. And the nursery was an absolute leap of faith. Nobody had really done it in Scotland before. We had incredible problems getting it through because we had this concept that the children would be taught outdoors 365 days a year.
Is it any worry you they're going to get covered in mud and everything that they're going
to
find?
I have to say, my heart sometimes sank watching the wee fella walking out the door in his full set of waterproofs and thermals in a snowy morning, and I was sitting in a nice warm car. But the more we got into it, the more we realised just how much the children loved it and how hardy they were and how they could adapt to their environment. And we created a fire pit for them and a muddy kitchen. A fire pit. And they sat down round the fire pit and had their lessons there. And they built their own wooden shelters that they could go into. And it was fantastic. And in some ways, it was like a rural childhood of 50 or 60 years ago.
Wait, before we go much further, I'm trying to place your accent.
I'm a hoik man.
Yiffy hoik. Absolutely. Did you grow up saying any of the hoik words?
Oh, very much so. Broad hoik, when I was brought up, was a very different accent, and it kind of was very close to Aberdonian. A lot of people often mistook me as having the Doric, but a very strong broad hoik accent was almost... it was very much frowned upon when I was in school. Not quite beaten out of you, but not encouraged. And I had a very famous uncle, Will McLaren, the rugby commentator.
Is that your uncle?
He is indeed, was, and rest his soul. And we were always taught, look at your uncle Bill, you know, he's fra Hoyk and he's sorted his accent out. But I often go back to Hoyk and it takes seconds to drop back in. Although I have to say, I'd been living in Indonesia in Bali for about 4 years with Intercontinental Hotels, and I was quite fluent in Indonesian by that stage. And I went back to Hoyk for the New Year 1 year, and a lassie came up and spoke to me in the pub, and what she said was, "Where are you, Kenyo? Oh, Kenyo, fine." And I thought, "Oh my God, she's speaking Bahasa," and then it suddenly dropped a penny. She was saying, "Who are you? Do I know you?" "Oh, I know you well."
and it suddenly, I was straight back into the Broad Hawick again.
Okay, can I ask you to go back into the Broad Hawick for the rest of this interview? Can you manage it?
I'll try my best.
Okay, then. So, Figgett, I mean, you were speaking when you were updating your presentation about Murray, going into, was it Murray and far else was it?
Culloden, into Inverness.
Inverness-shire.
We've been licensed by those councils on the reputation already to open up there. The Inverness site is just on the edge of the old Culloden battlefield.
Know it well.
And we'll probably have about 60 kids in there, and we're partnering with various people around that region. And the site in Elgin in Murray is just fantastic. It's a 60-acre wood with a paddock in the middle of it and a wee house. And we're intending there to have our classrooms as tree houses.
So you've got tree houses in Elgin. If it tells far out, there couldn't have been tree houses, though.
Well, we're going to, in Inverness, we're doing hobbit houses.
Hobbit houses?
Aye, and we've asked the Glasgow School of Architecture to design them for us as one of their student projects.
Oh, Mike, this is just getting better and better.
Well, yeah. I would have far rather, when I was a bairn, gone into a house like that, into a tree house or a hobbit house or a yurt, than into some old stale classroom and be looking miserably out the window. So I think we've captured the bairn's imagination. We've captured our own imaginations, which is fantastic.
I can see it by your face. You're still smiling all the way through this. You've got free-range bairns running our way and just thoroughly enjoying themselves.
I've never heard them described as free-range, but you're probably right. Feral occasionally, but...
Okay, I'm going to wish you all the best and see if it happens.
Thank you very much.
Mike Storey, director of Stromash Outdoor Nursery, and out of the 8 semi-finalists, guess far one. Stromash. Now, congratulations to Mike and the Hale team. Fit and ease, as they say. Now, as we were listening to Mike speaking there, we've just come for this launch, or the Scots Language Ambassadors.
Right.
Guess what I was thinking. There's Mike. He's been in 22 different countries working in the hospitality trade. He would make enough a good Scots language ambassador, wouldn't he?
I think so, aye. Especially with somebody with the kind of business background as well as the community side of things. I think that's the kind of folk that would need into the scheme.
See, 22 countries and you just flick it back into the Hawick language.
But I like your free-range bairns. I think
you like the free-range bairns.
That sounds like a project.
Right, we're going to leave Oban now and leave the new rural parliament to get sorted out. Thank you to Abdi for the hospitality and the company. Karen Matheson for Cabercaley sang at the opening. This is Karen singing that very song, A Fond Kiss.
A fond kiss, and then we sever. A farewell, alas, forever. Deep in her drum tears, I'll pledge thee. Warring sighs and groans I'll wage thee. Who shall say that fortune grieves him, while the star of hope she leaves him? Dark despair round benights me. I'll ne'er blame my partial fancy. Nancy, but to see her was to love her, love but her. Thank you.
that we never loved so kindly, and we never loved so blindly, never met or never parted. We had ne'er been broken hearted.
Karen Matheson with Paul Brady and Aphon Kiss, setting the scene for our January episode with Burns, but we're still in this year and in fine festive spirit. It's near that long ago I sat on a hill outside Bethlehem interviewing shepherds, just tending their flocks, shepherds standing there as they would have done for hundreds of years. And I was doing this, it was for a wee recording for Radio Scotland, and I looked into the wee hillside cave or the manger for a wee baby would have been born in that place just like it was, in Far Cains on Fitton of Bethlehem in Echt. This is a reading for the New Testament, Luke chapter 2, translated into Doric. Now it came about at that time, the Emperor Augustus gave out an edict that the whole world should pay tax. This was when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And ilkie man gied till his ain toon. And say, Joseph gied up fae Nazareth in Galilee to David's toon, called Bethlehem in Judea, to be taxed. You see, he was o' David's folk. And he took with him his lass Mary, her that was expecting her first bairn. And fan they were in Bethlehem, her time came. And she gave birth to a wee loony. She wobbled him up in clouts and laid him in the four star, because there was no room for them in the lodging. Now there was thereabouts some shepherds out in the parks watching over the sheep, when an angel of the Lord came to them, and the Lord's glory was shining around them. They were terrified. But the angel says to them, "Dinna be feared. I fetch good news to you and to a' the folk. This very day in David's toon, your Saviour was born, Christ the Lord. And this will be your sign. You'll find a bairnie wappet up in clouts and lying in a four star." At teens there was a muckle soon o' heavenly hosts singing God's praises. Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth, peace, goodwill to a' the folk. Reading from Luke chapter 2, the New Testament, translated into Doric by retired solicitor Gordon M. Hay from Lonmay near Peterhead. Now, Gordon took 6 years to complete the translation, 4 years to write and 2 years to check it, with the help of the Reverend Melvin Wood, originally from Portsoy, now at Blawhurtle in Glasgow. Gordon told me fit why he gave himself this monumental task.
Well, this I started with the Buchan Heritage Society for have a Doric service elke 2 year. And the Reverend Charlie Burney, weel kent in Doric circles in the northeast, produced the readings for them for elke service. But Charlie died in 2006, and the organisers spirited me if I would maybe just try and translate the readings for the 2006 service. So I did that, and I enjoyed doing it, and they were reasonably well received. So I just started to double a word, bitties mair.
I love the way you put it. You just doubled a word. It was mair than just doubling.
It was just doubling, because I had nae time scale put on it. I just did it when I felt like it.
But you've translated the hell of the New Testament.
Aye. But it took 4 years.
It's a huge job of work. But, were you feared about if you were translating it right or wrong or getting the right words here and there?
Feared's not the word. Terrified. But I managed to get a minister, a northeast Doric-speaking minister, that checked it off for me, and he was extremely critical.
Now, how did you come upon him?
I was at the General Assembly of the Kirk of Scotland in 2010, and I put out an appeal in Doric for a minister to come and help me. And Melvin Wood, Blawhurt Hill Kirk in Glasgow, contacted me and said he would be willing to help, and he was just absolutely superb. Didn't pull any punches. If he didn't like something, he dealt me straight. So no, I'm nae letting you off with that, he would say. You really think your bairns would read this? Really great.
Just what he needed.
Just what I needed.
I mind filming a sermon that was being done by the Reverend Dr. Joyce Colley in Inverurie Kirk. Now, folk were in tears after that sermon. And I've never thought of the Doric language as an emotional language, but is it?
I think it is, and I quite often say that when I'm speaking about this, if I'm invited out by a guild or an organisation to give them a talk and my translation, I say that one of the problems with Scots language in general is that in literature in Scotland, it tends in the past to have been used for the low life or comedy. And I blame Sir Walter Scott, because he started it with some of his characters in his novels. And so we've come used to Scotland the what. And as soon as somebody speaks in Doric, you think you have to laugh. But it can be emotional. And when I'm giving talks, I quite often read my translation of the Mark's description of Jesus' death. And I think that's very emotional.
Now, I could see by your face that you've actually come across the same scenario for... Have you ever been in tears when you're delivering the
I've had a lump in my throat. Think it's because it's a fairly earthy language. It's a simple language, and it uses words that we use elke day. There's nothing fancy about it. It's just describing the scene as the folk would have seen it.
The question I think I would like to finish with is, I would love you to do another reading for me, but the question is, is there hope?
I think there is hope. Certainly, like in my father's generation, they were not allowed to speak Doric in the school. If they did, sometimes they got the belt. But I think that's come full circle, and there is. I was half a lucky at our academy. I had an English teacher. We spent a lot of time on the work of Charles Murray. We spent a lot of time on Johnny Gibbagush at Nuke.
I've tried to read it a few times. So that's my all-important holy grail. I'm going to try and read Johnny Gibbagush at Nuke.
Well, you're speaking about 120 years ago, and that just shows you how much the language has been watered down in that 120 years. Because so many of the words in that book have just disappeared out of usage.
Right, we could go into an avalanche conversation about Johnny Gibb. But what's your next project? You've done all this.
I'm working on the Old Testament. It's three times the length of the New Testament, and I'm about a quarter of the way through it.
Gordon, that's amazing.
And I've still got Melvin down in Glasgow. I'm emailing him each book as I finish it, and he comes back with his nasty comments.
Give me an example of what he says.
Oh, well, the one it sticks in my mind was something I had translated, and he didn't like it, and he said, "I'm not letting you off with that."
So
but the annoying thing about him, he's erect. So I would struggle and struggle and struggle with something. For example, in one of the Gospels, Jesus' trial, there's two false witnesses. Now, if it's a Doric for two false witnesses, and I wasn't happy with whatever I put, and he comes straight back with twa lean loons. Perfect.
Simple as that.
Perfect. Twa lean loons.
Right, I'm going to finish this, because we could go on for hours with just delving back and forth into the Gwyd book. But give another appropriate ending to this.
Here's the story in the Gospel of Luke, and Jesus stilling the storm. A day, Jesus was in a boat with his disciples, and he says to them, "We'll head over to the other side of the loch." Say the keys off. As they were sailing, he fell asleep, and a howling wind got up on the loch. The water was coming an hour, and it was turning out gay mischancy. They came over to him, waked him, and said, "Master, Master, we're sinking." He waked up, gave the wind and the rough water a guid raging, and the gale devolved, and all was calm. And he says to them, "Far's your faith?" And being gay feared, they wondered at him, saying to one another, "Fit can a chiel's this? For he gars even the wind and the water David, he tells him."
Calm in the storm. We need that. Calm, Sue. Gordon Hay, thank you very much for that. He's the writer of the Doric New Testament. And just as we were listening to that, same conclusion again.
We're picking up the day.
We're picking up the day.
List.
Scots Language Ambassador. I'll get in contact with fantastic. Gordon if we never get a chance. This is Merck, the Caithness, Margie Sinclair singing Tak a Drama Before You Go.
Well, the time has passed so quickly, and the music's almost done. Heard the fiddler and the piper, the singer and the song. The time has come for us to leave you, one more song before we go. So button up and I be cheery, and tak a drama before you go. Say button up and I be cheery, and tak a drama before you go. For this night we will remember, for the music's been just fine. But the cold grey land o' Caithness can be cruel and unkind. So we must bend farewell and leave you, travel through the ice and snow. Say button up and I be cheery, and tak a drama before you go. Say button up and I be cheery, and tak a drama before you go. So good night, and God go with you, and watch over you until we can all meet here together, and our glasses we will fill. We will drink a toast to absent friends, and let the beer and whiskey flow. Say button up and I be cheery and tack a dram afore you go. Say button up and I be cheery and tack a dram afore you go. Say button up and I be cheery and tack a dram afore you go.
Right, that was Maggie Sinclair singing Tack a Dram Afore You Go as we were joining in Mick Faithness. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Freda Morrison with me, Steve Byrne, and we are in festive mode. Now, I told you earlier that this was our first anniversary of Scots Language Radio, our first ever year together. And fit a year it has been. Far Cairns and Fitness Studio the Nicht. When we started, we didn't ken fit with Tina on. And maybe we still dinna. But whatever we're doing, it's working. Most of the time, she said. And I'm going to finish by saying enough a big thank you to you, our listeners, for have supported us through this first year. And I thought you, we wouldna be. And I'm going to finish by playing the same recording that I made this time last year of Lillian Grant Rich's poem, A Christmas Prayer. A lot of folks have requested it again. But afore I go, didn't attack a dram, but I want to tack Richie, we're soon sorter, Richie Werner, through to join us, because you've never heard Richie soon. We've indeed heard Richie soon.
We hear him all the time in our lugs, eh?
Hey,
how's it going? I'm in your lugs, new listeners.
Are you in your lugs?
How are we doing?
So he really does exist.
Aye.
The only
that's
thing
me
is,
this tape isn't going to get off, is it?
No, it's, I hope not. watching it now.
We'll ever get him back into the ducat, that's what we're trying to say. Right, I have some Christmas presents to speak about for a minute before we find up to her. Because, near that long ago, you remember that lightning storm?
How can I forget
Street?
It? Aye.
A hail.
Goodness me.
It was on the front page of the Evening News in Edinburgh.
That was me.
Hooses in Richie's Street got hit by lightning, and Richie's Hoose got hit by lightning. The studio got hit by lightning. And you just got blown up by lightning.
I wasn't blown up, thank goodness.
But regardless of that, he decanted his stuff, the recording stuff, going into another studio, into a temporary studio, far we are at the moment. But he didn't just tack the equipment with him. He took the round table, right, that we were accustomed to sitting at, his mother's tablecloth, so we could feel it him, his granny's lamp standard, so we're sitting here with the tablecloth, a lamp standard, and the table lamp.
And I minded Frieda and Steve as well, so that was a bonus.
Aye, he took us as well.
That was after getting him, aye.
He took us
didn't leave us in the place where they're doing other work than him.
So, and he never turned grumpy. He just was... He remained nae grumpy. I mean, it's a miracle, I think, going through all that. And I'm going to put up a photograph of a burnt-looking socket. Every socket in Richie's hoose was looking like this. And you'll see what I mean with painful.
Oh, aye.
Now, for this, your services to Scots Language Radio, Richie Werner, you're my hero of the year.
Oh, gee whiz.
Please accept.
Oh, wow,
please accept. A bottle of fizzy stuff.
Oh,
look at that.
Thank you very
There's
much.
A bottle of fizzy stuff.
It's my pleasure, Frieda.
Right.
A joy.
Okay.
A pleasure. Thank you
and
so very
And the other
much.
Thing I was going to say, it's Christmas present time now.
Oh,
so this
thanks.
Is this is your Christmas present, Steve.
Thank you very much
for that. And this is your Christmas present, Richie, as well. So you get kiss. Okay, now, far's my Christmas present.
Well, since we're recording this in August, I've got this Kevin McLeod CD here, Frieda, as you can.
You did not take that in there.
I've got this table for you, Frieda, and this nice tablecloth.
You got the table?
Aye.
These lampies.
I think we're fine true to stereotypes. It's, we'll be running around Christmas Eve looking for things.
Okay, so we'll get a fish supper somewhere along the line. Doing it chuchters maybe later on. Right,
that's it.
You'll have to go back into your ducat again to press the buttons.
No bother. Right, I better go back.
Thanks,
folks.
So, Seaman.
Nice to speak to you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Right. Now, we'll be back in the new year. He had Beezer over Christmas and the Inuwinted and Arthing forby. As we have to do is make sure that Richie is not carried away with the fizzy stuff and presses the right buttons new. I thought I was going to get a Christmas present. Okay, I'm going to be happy with a fish supper, I suppose. Right. Here's the Christmas prayer. Lillian Grant Rich. If Richie gets time. Are you ready, Richie?
I'm ready.
Okay. Right. Merry Christmas to everybody. And as I said, hey the Ian you wanted. Bye for new. I'm just a humble tractorman. I dinna ken who to pray. But I haven't far to thinking, pluing here out on the brae, where the gulls are flocking round me like so many marble dews. I've been counting o'er my blessings, their files mair nor I can use. I look up to the left abeen, and ken ye're near me, Lord, and maybe ye'll forgie me if I try to say a word. It winna be the why they pray in kirks a' o'er the land, but somehow in your wisdom, Lord, I ken ye'll understand. It's coming on to Christmas. I hae beef and neeps and brose, but there's them that winna hae so much. Take pity, Lord, on those. Let nae living thing be hungry. Let nae living thing be cow, be it bird or beast or bairn, or the helpless or the old. The few but words I'm saying, ye could hardly ca' a prayer. I just ask as good as I hae got for mankind everywhere, so that a' out o'er the world, when the stars are glinting bright, there'll be peace and joy and plenty on this blessed Christmas night.